Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Komen, sitting once again in Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in the heart of the Klempire with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Welcome, Manny.
Hey, it's great to be back here.
Yes.
In this shithole they call a bar.
Sure.
But
sure.
It's a good place.
The Christmas Club Lounge.
Yeah, the Christmas Club Lounge.
Yeah, we just had Christmas. A lot of people will come here for Christmas Eve or Christmas night. Did you make it here either one of those nights?
No, I didn't. No.
Yeah, me either.
I don't. Once a week is enough.
Sure. I felt the same way.
Yeah,
I didn't even have the heart to bring it up to my wife, even though we just live blocks away. Yeah, I didn't even have the nerve to go, hey, you want to go over to Snake and Jake's? I know what the answer would have been.
Well, Dave, the Klempire Dave, he's not in town, is he?
I haven't seen him.
Yeah. He's taking care of his sister in California.
Yes. Family business.
Yeah, who's suffering from
Klempire business.
Yeah, I don't know. Right. Anyway, I didn't do that. The holidays are done, I guess. Christmas is over. We're here the day after Christmas.
Yes, Boxing Day.
Boxing Day, which is a great day. I punched my wife when I got up this morning.
Okay.
Yeah. And she punched me right back.
Right.
We celebrate it every year.
Yeah, a little bit of sparring.
It's kind of like Kato and Inspector Clouseau.
Okay.
We do a surprise attacks on each other.
Nice.
Which I used to do with my daughter when she was very young.
Yeah.
We used to do that constantly.
Oh, God.
I'd get home from work and she'd be home by 5 o'clock, whatever, from school.
She's already lying in wait.
And I come home and she's hiding somewhere. I go, where's Selena? And then she'd jump out of like a closet and attack me.
Oh. It's terrifying though, right?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun though. The neighbors didn't care for her too much because what happened was she got on the internet and she learned how to make bombs.
Oh, jeez.
So, little
anarchist cookbook.
Yeah, that kind of thing. You know that anarchist cookbook, that has how to make a bomb and all that, but have you ever read it?
I have not.
Oh, well, there is actually a very good recipe for a peach cobbler.
Okay.
It's really good in that cookbook. There's actually a very good recipe for that. So check it out, Nation.
It's well-rounded.
Because they got everything from a bomb and how to kill someone in a wheelchair to a peach cobbler.
Okay. Something for everybody.
Yeah, baking is very difficult. I've never been a good baker.
I've never even tried.
I've tried in the past. My wife makes some good pies. She actually made a key lime pie a few weeks ago, which was fantastic.
Hmm.
But there's nothing harder than baking a pie. Because they say easy as pie, but it's not that easy.
It's not that easy.
It's not that easy. I don't know. Do you bake at all?
I don't bake. It's too exact.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very messy. You make a mess.
It's a lot of cleaning up.
A lot of cleaning up.
Well, I live near the Rouses. Near the Robears, and they have an excellent bakery. If I just go buy a pie there,
right? Yeah.
It's a division of labor. It's like people specialize.
Some people are good at it. My wife's pretty good at it.
Yeah.
But I could never bake. I'm not a good baker. I'm not a good butcher.
Yeah, what about candlestick?
I'm not a good candlestick maker either.
Okay.
I'm none of that. Anyway.
You have your strengths, though.
I have my strengths.
Yes.
And one of them apparently is irritated my family and friends.
Go on.
Well, the holidays were here, and my family and friends all gathered me around. And they said I need help with my drinking. So I hired a bartender.
Okay.
So that's what I did.
Well, that's
end of that.
Help. That's got to help.
I answered that, quickly. Right. I said, okay, I'll hire a bartender. I'm making a mess. I make a mess in the bar, apparently.
Huh.
People make a mess in the kitchen. Anyway, what's been going on with you?
Oh, well, similarly, we've been going through the holiday rotation. Christmas Eve, went over to my brother's house, my whole family, all my Christian relatives were over there. And
they cursed you.
They cursed me.
Because you're the black sheep.
No, I am, but it's the black sheep are kind of favored in my family. So No, I'm in good stead with my family. It was
nice. Your father spoke with you?
No, my father's not doing very much talking at all these days. But my brother and I,
because you have him tied up.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Because he was talking too much.
The gag makes it tough.
Yeah.
You know. But no, we had him sitting there at the table, and my brother and I went into like a 2-hour nonstop conversation. All the scuttlebutt, the political scuttlebutt in Louisiana and New Orleans. So it's always nice to catch up with.
So what do you mean your father didn't speak?
Well, you know,
he was drooling.
He's just listening. He's sitting there in the chair and listening.
Because I woke up today and it was a big fucking thing of drool. I was so I fell asleep. It was such a hard sleep.
Yeah.
All this drool came out of my mouth and onto my pillow.
Okay.
Yeah, it happens a lot. It's not that bad.
Yeah. Well,
that means you have a good sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think so.
Right.
You know. You just don't want to drool like on a pavement or anything like that.
Or your desk.
Yeah, or your desk or anything like that. Oh, shit, I hear a dog.
Yeah, yeah. Dog's been here before.
Fucking dogs. Nothing worse than pets in a bar. But you know what's worse? Is the pet owners. They're the worst.
Well, that dog doesn't jump up on the furniture. It's got the little short legs.
They think it's cute.
Yeah.
The owners think it's cute.
Yeah. You know, everyone thinks it's cute. It's like a cute little dog. But you know what I see? I see a fucking football. That's what I see. A football that could fucking, you know, be thrown at me and injure my skull.
I see an antihistamine.
Yeah, that's what I hear. I see a fucking football. You better keep that fucker away from
me,
man.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll keep him at arm's length. Keep him back. But so then then we had Christmas Day, and it was also the first day of Hanukkah. So the first,
right,
I think the second time.
Some prayers, you light a candle.
Yeah. Well, we lit two, you know, you light the one, and then you light the first candle with the first day candle with the helper candle. So
really?
Yeah, yeah. So each, whatever day it is, first day you have the...
Now how many days are there?
Eight.
Eight fucking days.
8 days, yeah.
Well, you guys really milk it, don't you?
Well, you know, it wasn't my. I didn't create it. We're just
now. What kind of food do you guys serve?
So you know, you'd have like potato pancakes, you know, latkes, a brisket. People will make a brisket. Now we're having everybody over to our house on Sunday. Everybody's going to be in town and have the Hanukkah celebration at my house for all the Jews and the family.
And how many is that?
It's actually going to be like about 17. So it's
really?
Large,
on your side of the family, there's
group.
17?
Well, you know, in our family in New Orleans, yeah.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
Between my kids and, you know, just everybody who's in on this celebration. But then we have, you know, this. So then New Year's Eve is right after that. Now, I realize today this is the last show we'll be doing of 2024.
Good.
And it'll actually be the first show to come out in 2025.
Good.
And also that it's the episode 298.
Oh,
so it's just one more show after this before we get to our big 300 show. We'll have to figure out, cook something up for that.
Yeah, you'll cook something. Maybe you'll cook a brisket for that.
Okay, well.
You know, maybe that's something you can do.
The last time I remember we had...
some latkes or something.
Yeah, well, those things, they go fast, man. You can't
now, do you like it with the sour cream and applesauce?
You know, actually, I have kind of a unorthodox way. I like them with cocktail sauce.
Really?
Like
shrimp.
Well, like ketchup and horseradish mixed together.
Oh.
Which is real sacrilege in a sense, but that's the thing that I like. Well, that's because that's something that I would... make to eat with brisket. You know, a lot of people like horseradish on brisket, right? Or horseradish on steak. You've heard of that before, huh?
It's good with French fries, too.
Yeah.
Cocktail sauce is good with French fries.
Yes, it is.
Like flat French fries.
It is. Yeah. I like horseradish and ketchup anytime. So, anyway, that's...
Now, that's something you bring into the bedroom, too?
not so far.
Don't tell him.
Not so far. We'll see.
Because, you know, you like some. You know, people like to have their food and sex. You know, I've heard, you know, a lot of people like that.
Yeah.
Food and sex. You know, chocolate and strawberries.
Yes.
You know, ketchup and horseradish sauce. You know,
cocktail sauce.
You know, all that stuff.
The horseradish could be tough, man. Yeah. The tomato sauce is acidic, too.
Well, it depends where you put it. Okay. And where you eat off of.
Okay.
You know, if you're eating off of a certain part of the body, then it might be very nice.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I'm
better. You know? Now, how often have you brought in food into sex?
Never.
Never? You've never brought in food into sex.
How many times have you?
Well, alcohol is always part of sex, isn't it?
Well,
you know, you have a dinner, some drinks, and then boom, you're banging.
Well, yeah,
you know?
Sure. Yeah, you can have a cocktail there.
Yeah. Anyway, the holidays are over, you know, and people do stupid things during the holidays. I saw a story just about a week ago where this woman was arrested in, like, I think Georgia. She got arrested trying to steal a fake Christmas tree. She was shoving it up her vagina and trying to get away with it. You know, it was crazy going nuts.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how she did it.
Yeah, I don't think
But the picture, her mugshot looked like she could have been someone who could do it. You know? That kind
of
thing.
Okay, very small tree.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It could have been. It was an artificial tree. It wasn't a real tree.
Yeah. You know? It doesn't sound advisable.
But she looked like one of those people who wear those shirts and the belly does, you know, it doesn't cover her belly. Those kind of people, you know.
Like Santa Claus?
Yeah, like Santa Claus,
okay.
Exactly.
All right,
you know?
All right.
But also, I heard also that Home Depot, you know how Home Depot sell those 12-foot skeletons during Halloween? You
okay.
know, they sell those big... Well, apparently, they were selling 12-foot baby Jesus for people's nativity scenes.
Wow.
Can you imagine that? A 12-foot baby Jesus?
Seems unnecessarily large, terrifyingly
well,
large.
Well, yeah, well, that's all terrifying, man. Jesus and skeletons and baby Jesus.
Right.
Religion,
right.
In fact, is all terrifying, you know. You know, so anyway, what's going on with you?
Oh, well, not too much. As I was saying, I'm playing a couple of gigs this weekend. But, you know, I noticed in the coming up, you know, the next Saints game is... in town here playing your Raiders.
Yeah, it's going to be a hell of a game. Okay. Both loser teams.
It's like the Saints have a terrible record. One of the Raiders have a worse record.
Yeah,
unbelievable,
two
man.
Two bad teams, man.
Are you going to the game?
Yeah, I'm going.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm going.
You have a little crew of Raiders fans going together?
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll
see. Is Wadzilla back in town?
No, he's dead.
Okay, dead to you.
He's dead to me, Wadzilla. Right. So I don't, you know, I don't know where he is.
Okay.
He's up in the northwest, you know, trying to sitting on the corner going miss. You know, that's what he's doing, basically.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah. Last thing I want to talk about.
Okay.
You want to talk about anything?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I saw last week that a woman in Algiers, which is across the river, she's a jogger. And she was attacked by a pack of dogs, wild dogs. Did you see this story?
I saw that, man.
Yeah. And I just thought, of course, you know, my love for animals runs deep, you know, as you can tell. But it's like there's a story about it, and she's interviewed on the TV, the channel that I was watching, but she doesn't want her face shown. It's like one of those, like, you know, it's just like a black screen. It's like, why not? What the fuck's that about?
Yeah.
The dogs aren't going to come hunting you
down.
Right. Yeah, the dogs aren't going to go call their boss
the
or whatever.
The dog gang.
Yeah.
It's
not the dog mafia.
Right.
You know, it's like, what the fuck is that about? She didn't want her face shown.
Huh.
But yet she showed her bitten up arms and scratched up, you know, elbow and stuff like that. But she didn't want to go on camera and talk about the dogs.
Huh. Maybe they bit her face and she didn't
I don't know. No, they didn't say she bit her face.
Happened to me.
Yeah?
Really?
Yeah.
Did you go on camera?
No.
Oh, okay.
But you got bitten on the face by a dog?
Yeah, I do. I have a scar right here.
How old were you?
5.
Oh, geez.
We can get into that, my childhood trauma, later.
Well, we could get into it now.
Well, you know, when I was around five, my dad brought home, he went out to the valley in L.A., because I grew up in L.A., went to see an old friend of his in Bakersfield, 2 hours away, whatever.
Brought a dog home?
He brought a dog home. It was my new pet. But it wasn't a dog. It was a baby wolf. And my dad didn't realize it. And his buddy, I guess, didn't realize it either. And within like 2 days, this fucking baby wolf was attacking me and my brother, trying to, you know, in our sleep and stuff. And so my dad was like, what the fuck's this about? So it disappeared one day.
Oh, okay. Know? Went back to the woods.
It went back somewhere.
Right, right.
My dad was one of those guys who, he didn't want to pay to have the dog put down or whatever, the older dog. So he would just let it die and throw it in a dumpster somewhere. That's what he would do, And that's what I think he did with this baby wolf. He just let it go free somewhere.
Right,
like
yeah,
that,
yeah.
To get eaten by, a pack of dogs. He was a good guy, though,
Yeah, okay.
He was a sweetheart.
Yeah, he all seems right. like a good guy.
Right on. Well, maybe we should get our guest in here.
Sure, yeah, why not?
Get to find out about this dog bite here.
Yeah.
All right, well, it's the guest, actually, the second time she's appeared on the show, but the first time was way back in September of 2020.
Oh.
You were right in the thick of lockdown.
Still having drinks then.
You were still having drinks
still
then?
Still having drinks then.
Yeah, we were having drinks then, too. That was episode 123.
Yeah.
I think it was called Living Malavitas. Since that was, obviously during lockdown, it was remote. This is her. She's making a return appearance to be in person with us here. So anyway, she's a terrific singer, performance artist, actress, rapper, front person for New Orleans' premier post-punk art rock band, Malavitas, with former guest Rob Cambray. And she also performs as MC Sweet Tea with her rap burlesque dance act. And she has her song, Proper Fucked, was featured in the Amy Schumer TV show Life and Beth. And she's currently working on a new record with Malavitas. We're going to get into all that and more. But without further ado, MC Sweet Tea, Miss Tiana Hux.
Yes, yes, y'all. Thank you for that.
Welcome,
lovely
Tiana.
Introduction and for the opportunity to get troubled with y'all.
Yeah, yeah. Sit here in person. We can look at each other's eyes and
trouble the men.
You were you're talking about a dog bite early on. You wanted we had another guest that was on the show, Danny Nick, and he was on a big international heavy metal tour playing with I Hate God and playing bass in that band. And he was hanging out with some people after a gig, and there was a dog, and he got too close to the dog, and the dog bit him on the face, and he wound up having to go to the hospital and leave the tour.
Oh, God.
So.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. So dogs, man, you know.
They're wild. I mean, they're animals, so
sure.
They're unpredictable.
Yes,
that's the thing.
Yes, they
we
are.
Feel they're domesticated, and there's a couple over there wearing...
Yeah, you
rave outfits.
Right.
There's some dogs in the bar with glow sticks on them.
Right, right.
Who just came in earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so
I think we're okay.
I think you think?
Yeah, yeah, I think
okay.
We're safe with them.
All right.
Bar dogs, you know.
So people think they're cute, right?
They know how to behave themselves in here. They're loaded.
Well, that thing about Danny Nick, well, he made the mistake. He said to the guy, he said, does your dog bite? And he says, no. And then the dog bit him. And he says, I thought your dog didn't bite. He said, that's not my dog.
Yes. Second Clouseau reference.
Yeah.
Very good. Pink Panther. Classic. Tiana.
Pink Panther 2.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Still.
It's on my face, so it's like I wear the scar. But
do you have pets?
I used to have pets, but I just can't be bothered now.
Sure, sure.
They're just annoying.
I mean, they're lovely. I just am a caregiver also in my life.
You have to pick up their shit.
You just have to take care of them. And
yeah,
I'm just, I take care of kids. And so I get home and I want to take care of.
And you're in a band.
And I'm in a band.
Yeah, yeah. There, you know,
I take care of things. So
sure.
I don't take care of anything.
Well, let's for our listeners that didn't hear that first one, it was so long ago, let's go back a little bit. So you're not from New Orleans.
I'm not from New Orleans.
You were born
spiritually.
Texas or something?
No, I'm a Hoosier, for those of you who don't know.
Oh, okay.
Hoosiers from Indiana.
Oh, okay.
And I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, which is kind of a sister city to New Orleans.
All
right. On the river, French.
Right, right.
River City.
Right.
They have a Kentucky Derby there, and it's very much like, I was born in Indianapolis, but I really consider myself. I grew up in Louisville, so they have the Kentucky Derby there, and it's a, like a, almost like a little mini Mardi Gras that that they have.
Yeah.
Around it in at the
right.
The last
there's
week
a lot
in
of
April.
Pissing in the streets and throwing up. Well,
I mean, there's just a lot of parties, and there's okay. like a hot air balloon race and the steamboat race, and there's bluegrass on the river, and there's the
right, a certain southern aristocratic vibe, old school.
Absolutely, there's a parade. There's a Pegasus parade.
Old times
parade.
There are not forgotten. It's, shall we say?
Coincidentally, I had got the dog bite on a derby day when I was five. So we're at the, it was crazy, at the people's house, and, you know, we didn't really know them, and had the dog, and I was, you know, I liked the dog. I was five, and
right.
I was throwing the rawhide with the dog, and they all went inside, and then the dog, you know.
I got too excited.
Yeah, bit me.
Right, okay.
Tore my lip in half.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, so it was, you know, it's a mess, and still scar, but, you know, it worked out.
I never noticed it.
Still works.
Yeah, there you go. Right on.
Now, Indianapolis, that's where...
Kurt Vonnegut?
No, that's where the Weber Grill was invented.
Oh, hey.
Do you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the Weber Grill is from Indianapolis. In fact, there's a restaurant in Indianapolis that I've been to where... It's an indoor restaurant, but if you go back in the kitchen, it's all Weber grills. They cook everything on a Weber grill. It's amazing.
It's a fantastic product.
Yeah, it's a fantastic product. Yeah, you didn't know that.
Shout out to Indianapolis.
I mean, and shout out to Weber grills.
And
maybe they could sponsor Trouble Men.
And then Indiana is one of the few states that doesn't do daylight savings, right?
That's true.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I left when I was two.
You left when you were two to get bit.
So where'd you go when you were two?
She went to Louisville.
Went to Louisville.
Oh, okay. So you went to elementary school in Louisville. Yeah. All that time, are you already interested in acting, performance?
Absolutely. Yeah. Music, yeah. All that, I mean...
sort of like school plays?
More like watching MTV a lot at home. Okay. Loved all of that. Culture, like, no, I think I did gymnastics and, you know, made up little songs to myself in my room. And
all right. Just keeping your own company?
Yeah, I was, like, by myself a lot.
Huh.
Yeah.
You have siblings?
Parents were alcoholics.
Oh, okay.
Spent a lot of time by myself.
All right. Is your bottle? Your own kind
True
of bottle?
True story. I do. I have a sister. Yeah. Yeah, and so we're close.
Okay.
Yeah, your parents?
You guys kept each other
parents?
Company.
Were they were like having an adult saga somewhere else.
I think there are some couples, married people, who like the idea of having children, but raising them is like, fuck this, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
Was your parents like that?
I don't know. I think it was just a different era, too.
Yes.
And they just were like, okay, you got this, you know.
Key parties
and
all that. Yeah.
Key parties.
That was more 70s.
Kids were left to their own devices. Well, this was the 70s.
It was the 70s, yeah.
Well, and MTV's not in the 70s, so MTV is in the 80s.
No, I guess I'm shifting around.
Me too.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But
it's all relative.
A lot of minimal supervision.
So I didn't get into too much trouble.
Did you make your parents cocktails?
I did not.
Okay,
that's like a Hollywood version of
I know
it.
Many
it wasn't
kids.
That romantic.
It wasn't that romantic.
Oh, really?
Mommy Dearest, I think that was the scene.
Oh.
Yeah.
I know a lot of kids who I grew up with, you know, who used to, parents would have parties and the kids would make the cocktails for the adults, and that was very cute.
That is cute.
You know, until they started, you know, drinking their own libations.
Right. Making one for them.
Yeah, making one for
two
them.
For you, one for me.
Yeah. You know. So what did your parents do besides drink?
I don't know. Like, had affairs.
Oh, really? they were on welfare?
Get into all that.
No.
Your dad sold Weber Grills, right?
He sold Weber Grills.
Yeah.
I think he was a mortgage banker.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Like,
right.
I have mortgages, so I understand what that is,
put a roof over your head.
They weren't the worst. They weren't the best.
Sent you to
they did their best. They sent me to gymnastics, to some horseback riding.
But they never got you a pet.
They didn't get me music lessons. I think I would have been
Did you want music lessons? Is that something you were desirous of?
That would have been a good thing. I don't think at the time, but...
Because you had a goldfish.
Okay. I had an imagination.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I had some dogs.
You had some dogs.
They didn't bite. They were all right.
Okay.
Because well, they were too drunk.
Exactly. What gave it away?
Well, I know you wound up getting, at some point you go to Austin. And,
so I go to Austin. And went to Houston with them. And
okay, the whole family moves.
The whole family moves. Family split up. Moved to Houston. Family split up. Stayed there anyway. Went to Austin for college days and was hanging out. Went to UT? I went to UT. Okay. I went out to San Francisco for a minute to the art school there and was just like, me and my best friend, we're 18, was like, we couldn't do it. It was too far away. It was too big of a thing. We just couldn't swing it. Okay. But it was fun for a minute, you know. I went to some punk shows in the Bay and whatever.
And what year
anyways,
is this?
We went back. This is like 92.
Okay,
so we came to Austin. So we were in Austin in the 90s. It was fun place to be.
Like
so also
it was
Austin, sister city to New Orleans. A lot of creative flow between here and there. Also,
right, right.
So some
now,
college friends.
Who were the bands in San Francisco? And there, was it? Who were those bands?
God, we saw National Touring Acts. We saw Green Day. We saw Green Day in like a.
Well, they're an like Oakland band. They're not
right,
San Francisco
yeah, yeah.
band.
But
yeah,
still,
but still, we're in the Bay Area.
But what's that? Yeah, there was that really big band.
It's like a high school gymnasium we saw them in one time. It was before they blew up. Yeah.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. You know.
Well, so when you're at UT, you wind up like
playing punk rock.
Performance.
Yeah, was doing music, was playing drums and doing performance art at UT and started making theater.
Now, did you know Matthew McConaughey there?
No, I did not. But I knew Richard Linklater and worked with him on his movie Waking Life.
Okay.
Right, you were in that movie, right?
I was in that movie, yeah.
Now, he's supposed to bring out a new movie, I think, that's coming out soon about... go ahead.
He did one here that was fun. Our friend Henry Griffith involved in that.
I just saw Henry last night.
Yeah.
Saw him last night at a Christmas party.
I was in Henry Griffith's Easter egg movie he made for the Dukes of Hazzard. He did like a Easter egg for the DVD release of it.
Oh, really?
And it was about, he kept trying to get get something made, you know, like they hired him to make something. And nobody would give him any time. So he's like, God, what do I get to do to make get these people to make a movie? Oh, I have to do these crash dummies. You're going to have to get the stunt dummies to do a movie. So then he started working on that idea of getting like what the stunt dummies do on their time off in New Orleans. And so I got to get romantic with the Johnny Knoxville stunt dummy at the Matador Lounge at the One Eye Jack's bar. My famous improvised line for Henry was, I never do this. So every time I see Henry, I never do this. Everyone can feel free.
Night.
Feel free to use
his
the
daughter
line.
Is growing up fast, man. She's such a cutie pie.
She's so beautiful.
Yeah, his daughter's growing up fast.
Mm-hmm.
But he seems like a good guy.
Yeah, he's a great guy. So you blossom into a performance and artist in Austin. Is that where you start MC Sweet Tea?
I started
in Austin?
Really here. Here.
Because you kind of come here and then you go back to LA, but you kind of jump around a little bit.
Jumped around.
But you started MC Sweet Tea here in New Orleans?
Started it here in New Orleans. I was making performance art there and I was working on Waking Life and other projects there. Live performance art, and I started coming over here, and I saw the Shimshimettes, which were the burlesque troupe that were happening at the Shim Sham Club, which became One Eye Jacks, which became Toulouse Theater, back to its original thing, and I saw what they were doing, and I was like, oh my God, I want to do that. At the same time, I was working on writing raps and becoming a rapper, and so I had this vision of making this rap MC. I would MC this burlesque show, and be the rapper and, you know, directed these women eventually around me performing kind of little like meta plots to the songs that would go along with the songs, be kind of like extending the ideas of the songs with the direction that we were going on stage, the things that I was rapping about, they would be doing different things that were related to that,
right,
or extra to that, you know, almost dreams of it, dreams within dreams. So I did that work before Katrina. So I was kind of back and forth between here and there. But I saw that. I saw them in like 99 and I was like, oh, I gotta do that. So I moved here and I started working on that more and wrote a record and got to record that in Virginia with these guys who have a band called Everything. And they had a hit in the 90s called Who Got the Hooch. And they were like an MTV band. They were like Dave Matthews' little brother band.
Okay.
And got to make a record with them in Virginia. And I released that record right before Katrina happened. And then I went out to LA after that and gave that a spin. It was weird. Came back.
Now, the MC Sweet Tea thing where you're talking about the choreography and the dreams, mm-hmm, within dreams, yeah, and all that. I mean,
yeah,
where does all that theory come from, or where is that part of your UT training that you had a good teacher, you have a mentor who's hip, yeah, to you, to this way of looking at things? Because
absolutely,
like, all of your projects, I like, you know, Malavitas, everything about that band as far as like the visual identity, the art direction in it, your performance in any context, on stage, you're so engaged. It's also deliberate. It's also present. That's not something that most performers do, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, it's particular to that. In my discipline is studio art and performance art. And so as a musician, I feel very much like an outsider artist. And I just do what I can with what I got. For me, I think it's really primitive, and so I'm always inspired by musicians like yourself and other people here who are just so well-versed in all of the theory of it, which is something I lack, and, you know, I make attempts to gain through practice, but, you know, it's you know, it's sound and vision, so as a studio artist, that's my discipline. I think about visuals. I think about, you know, the poetry of it. And then the songs are really based in character and poetry. And so then creating visuals is just another way to extend the metaphors within the songs or create other metaphors adjacent to the songs and their themes that they're touching on. And then trying to stitch those together with the other songs to try to, you know, writing a set as if it's a bit of theater, and then I also write immersive theater and write, you know.
Right. Well, let's slow down because I want to get into all that, all those different things.
Linda Montano was my teacher at UT, who's a big performance artist in the bona fide canon of women performance artists, and she was great. I had other great teachers, but she was the one. If there was,
nice,
you asked.
Absolutely. We like to give credit to these people that
standing, you know, on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
You know, her work was about life as art, and I definitely took that with me beyond, you know,
right,
UT studio art classes. Just the whole idea of it. It was you know, just a lot of permission. I mean, I actually perform on stage, and, you know, still write and create performance art, but just the idea that anything could be intentional, and it's really about the intentionality of work is what is important, and that could be in any aspect of your life. You could be communicating deep ideas and deep intention to share with other people, or as a moment to yourself, or your dog, or your mom, whatever.
Right,
yeah.
Right. That is somewhat rare in New Orleans, or you know, I would say that your approach to it, I don't see other people.
Most people are really studied and accomplished musicians. Like,
well, so we agree that everyone brings what they can.
Absolutely.
To the, but it's so refreshing to see, and
thank you.
You know, I've told you before, I've said it to other people, you know, Malavitas is one of like the two rock bands that I will leave my house to go see in New Orleans.
It's always so fun to see you there.
The band sounds better and better.
Who else do you see? Who's the other?
Well, I'll go see the Happy Talk
Band. I was going to say, you'll see the Happy Talk?
I'll go see Luke Spur Allen,
sure,
the Luke Warmer, you know.
Yeah.
And there's other bands I really
we share
like.
A drummer in Jeff Massey, who's Jeff also Massey, been a Troubled Man.
Former Troubled Man podcast guest. Yeah, yes. He's another tall drink of water like yourself.
We're tall.
Yeah, yeah, I like that.
I don't wear heels too much.
You don't need them.
I know. It's yeah, it's a little
you're tall,
too
you
much.
Have the long neck, you
it's
know.
It's too much. I'm like a yeah, giraffe. Jeff,
so you know, no.
Like a talk to my doctor.
Like a swan. Well, Malavitas, tell us about how that band, remind us how that band kind of started. Was that you and Marcus?
Marcus Bronson. Marcus Bronson and I started writing songs together.
Oh, okay.
And we did this for years. Like out of Sweet Tea, I started coming back to New Orleans to bring that work back here after Katrina. I left after Katrina and then I felt like I wanted to come back.
You went to Texas after Katrina?
I went to L.A. and I lived out there for 2 years. Okay. And that was interesting and kind of tough after being here. So authentic in Austin, very authentic. I wanted to check it out, and I did. You know, I got to Hollywood, and yeah. It was just weird. You know, I mean, I love the movies, but it was really pretty strange. So I went back to Austin to take care of a house that I owned there, and that was great. You know, because then I saw friends, and I was like, oh, whew, that was something out there in L.A. I guess I'm kind of belong here in Texas more. Else, I'm gonna, you know, need to take care of this house that I right. own, or I'm gonna lose it. And right. And then I wanted to come back to New Orleans, and I felt like I needed to make a new body of work to get over here. So I wrote a new show, and I started working with Marcus, who was dating and then married a best friend of mine, Danielle Bruchet.
Oh, okay.
And so then Marcus and I started collaborating, and then we spent years doing that, writing other stuff together, and then from that work kind of jumped off with the band in Austin. And so it was like kind of back and forth between here and there
now
for
your
years.
Your first solo record, that's Story.
Uh-huh.
And where did you make that record?
In Virginia with
these
Everything
band.
Guys.
Okay,
right.
Okay,
so I started writing that when I was here, and I was inspired by the whole scene, burlesque scene that was going on, and okay. the rock and roll scene, you know, friends like Luke and Scully and
right.
Bailey, you know, these, you know, just people.
I see Bailey at the club all the time.
You Which see, one?
Bailey.
Which club?
NOAC.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I see him all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's trying to get in shape.
Yeah, yeah, he is. Yeah. I saw him at the Molly's 50th anniversary party. He was playing over there with other former drummer Mike Andrepont. So Mike Andrepont
was
part of the story too. Yeah.
Right, Mike Andrepont plays on the first Malavitas LP.
He plays
LP,
on the first one.
And he played with Scully for many years. Right, he was
Absolutely.
In Morning 40.
And the Morning 40 still was. They were just playing over there like
seven.
A couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, and still, and Rob and him played together in the Rough Seven. So I was playing with Marcus, and then I was coming over making these trips and doing shows and with the girls dancing and with Marcus, and then I was starting a rock band over in Texas with best friend of mine and some really talented musicians there. And then I couldn't get over not being here. So
yeah.
I was like, time to move back over here and just be happy. Henry Griffith saw him at a Chaz Fest, and he was where I was performing in one of the Chaz Fests. I was traveling, and Henry said, another Henry quote, "You belong here."
Oh.
Which touched my heart, and
nice.
I'm like, I do. Damn
nice.
It. So gotta make this happen, and moved over with my husband. It was hard to
nice.
Move. And leave Austin, but we, you know.
What does your husband do here?
He distills rye whiskey for Sazerac.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. He's got the mustache for it.
He does.
He looks like that guy.
You've always been close to the booze with your parents and now your husband.
Yeah, I also stopped drinking 3 years ago, yeah. so
right.
it's better
right.
for me to
yeah.
not.
Sure.
Little kid in the candy store is not such a great thing. But anyway, so we moved over here. 8.5 years ago, Rob joined us. Rob played one of the Chaz Fests with us.
Rob Cambray.
Yeah, Rob Cambray.
Great guitar player.
He's another club member.
Another Trouble Men podcast.
Yeah. Yes, he was early on when we were still doing it at the Ring Room there.
Yeah.
So
gotta have him back on.
He's great.
Yeah.
He's a real talker too.
He is.
He's got a great DJ voice too.
Yes.
He's a great storyteller too.
And he's done so much stuff with the improvised music scene in New Orleans and the whole country. You know, I mean, he's brings people from all over the New York down here. And amazing performers.
Real peach too. Such a sweet guy, right?
Yeah. And his wife is an old friend of mine. So it's New Orleans is all. Very close. Well, speaking of close, I think my drink is close to being empty.
Yeah, let's get in. A troubled nation knows what to do. We'll be right back.
Back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet.
Yes.
I am Renee Coleman. Back with our guest, Miss Tiana Hux.
What's
now,
up?
Tiana, as you just witnessed, we received a piece of mail here at the Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge. It's from a devoted fan, listener, Mr. David Nealon. And yes, we love to get mail at the bar here. I always say it makes me feel real old timey, you know, like when people didn't, you know, they didn't know how to get you just write your name on it and send it to the with the name of the city and the post office will find you.
It does feel old timey.
Yeah. Like Charles Bukowski mail at the bar. So we opened it up.
Looks like a Charles Bukowski type of picture.
Yeah, it does. So it's a kind of a Pulp Fiction cover card here.
Yeah. Tawdry.
Pushover.
Yeah, pushover. Say the line.
Pushover. The torrid tale of a town more wicked than Peyton Place.
Oh.
Okay, a timely reference, Peyton Place.
Yeah.
I think that was on in the 60s.
Right,
And then, so it's a lovely card.
Beautiful.
And inside he has all these, so that's a real classic postcard of the Blue Room in New Orleans of the Roosevelt Hotel. I mean, that's an old-ass postcard, probably from like the 50s or 60s. And then the next one is the Huey, beautiful colorized Huey P. Long Bridge postcard.
Wow.
And that one's been sent.
Oh.
It was sent from New York at some point. And then here, the John McDonough Monument at Lafayette Square. There, we used to, on John McDonough Day, we would go.
Is it still there?
Wow.
I don't know.
Or did the, they might have taken it down.
They might have taken it down. They had to rename all the schools, but he gave a lot of money to the schools. We used to all dress in white and march down there.
Of course you guys did.
And,
that's cute.
And then here's Pontalba Apartments.
Beautiful.
All these New Orleans. I love this, man.
I've been in one of those. It was amazing.
What is that other one?
I was arrested in one of those rooms.
Yeah.
Roosevelt Hotel. On and on. These are all beautiful
But what does the card say?
Then his card says, Dear Manny and Renee, thanks for another great year of Troubled Men Podcast.
Oh.
You guys don't get the respect and recognition you deserve.
Exactly.
For putting out such an awesome show. I hope you keep it up for years to come. Here are some old postcards of New Orleans, Los Angeles,
elves.
That I hope you will get a kick out of or will jog a memory. Yes, it did. Keep up the awesome work in 2025. All the best, David. Well, thank you so much, David. That really warms
David
my heart.
David who?
Wow. David Nealon.
Oh, David Nealon.
These are nice.
So shout out to David Nealon.
Well, this is the ambassador from
the those are so cool.
That's on Wilshire Boulevard.
Well, so
your old hand.
Well, you know, you don't have to send stuff to the bar, though you can. The address being 2612 Oak Street, New Orleans, 70118. But make it easier than that. You can, if you want to support the podcast. And also David included two crisp $20 bills.
Whoa.
In this. That's the most important part of all this.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, David. And
hits of crack go a long way.
There you go. There you go. You got your weekend plan. Or at least the rest, of
tonight.
I got
the next hour plan.
Next
what are you talking
hour,
about
sorry.
My weekend?
I don't know what I'm thinking. I'm just saying words.
Didn't you used to smoke crack. You know, come on. Four hits, $20 is not going to do a weekend.
I stand corrected, Manny. I don't know what I was thinking. Anyway, we have the PayPal and the Venmo links there in the show notes of every show, as well as we have the Patreon page there, the links for that if you want to, make it automatic supporting the podcast. Also, follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and rate, subscribe, and review the podcast wherever you're listening to it. Give us 5 stars. It helps us a lot. Costs you nothing. Also want to give a shout out to or mention Johnny Campa, a great guitar player from Lost Bayou Ramblers.
Awesome.
Has a new ambient pedal steel record coming out on January 10th. He has a record release show on January 9th at the Hotel Peter and Paul. You and I did a podcast from there one time. Remember that?
Maybe I don't know.
It's okay if you don't.
Yeah.
I think that was the Megan McCracken episode.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Cracking up.
I remember that.
That was crazy going nuts.
That was a crazy
say.
Show. And it was during the pandemic and it opened up
right
for a week
the
or
end.
Two.
Yeah.
And that's.
Anyway.
We don't want to go there.
No. So, anyway, check out Johnny Campo's new record. And he's playing January 9th at Peter and Paul Hotel.
Oh, he's great.
Yeah. And also, I mentioned one of my bands, Los Tremolo Kings, featuring Margie Perez. We're playing the next night at Madam Vic's, January 10th. And it's big things happening with that band.
Wow,
also,
I haven't heard that. She's a great singer.
Yeah. We have a great Chicha, Weirdo, Cumbia
Chicha?
Trio.
Yeah. You and Margie and who?
And Phil the Tremolo King and Doug Garrison.
Come on.
Yeah, it's a tight little unit.
Wow.
A lot of space. Anyway. And also mentioned Malavitas is playing the Sunday before that. It's a Sunday matinee show.
With Lenny
4 p.m.
Zenith.
With Lenny Zenith.
Pop combo.
Right on.
Come on.
At BJ's. And also, you have another gig coming up after that on the 24th of January at Siberia.
We do.
So, yes. So, opportunities to see Tiana's band. And that's enough of that. Back to Tiana.
Hey,
so,
it's all me.
Right on. So anyway, you made it back to New Orleans. You're assembling the band. The pandemic hits. You come on the Troubled Men podcast.
Oh man, we released the record.
We
released the record, and 2 months later, everything closed down.
Right, I know.
We were talking about how we shut down the Circle Bar together. We had this great show.
Right.
You were there. It was like Saturday night Circle Bar with Happy Talk, and it was just and then it was shut down.
A week later we had the final gig with the Geraniums playing.
Oh my god.
Y'all
were still going? They were like, "Don't do it." They were like, "They already said to not do anything by then." By Wednesday. They were like, "Don't do anything."
Stop what you're doing. Whatever
years,
you do,
the last,
stop it.
The last gig was
a nightmare. It's like a movie. The last night of the Geraniums. I'm sorry. I do want to hear this. Please.
I ran into the guy who was supposed to be on the co-bill for the final night, what wound up being the final night, March 2020. And it was supposed to be a double bill between the Geraniums and this other band. I can't remember. But anyway, this guy.
The Ramones?
It was not the Ramones.
Oh, no. Okay.
But earlier that day.
Gladys Knight and the Pips.
Not Gladys. I love Gladys Knight, but not her. But they posted on social media and said, out of an abundance of caution, our band will not be playing our gig tonight at the Circle Bar.
Oh.
The Geraniums will still be playing. I was like, yes, that's one of my favorite posts about the Geraniums ever, you know.
And then two of the guys died.
Complete. Well, one had just died. Jeez. One had already died, not from COVID. Neither one died from COVID.
But oh, yeah.
Anyway, yes, that was all those years ago. Now, but at that time, you'd put the record out. Now, the good news is the record is still terrific.
Thanks.
And you guys have continued to keep the band going. You had Carlo
through four drummers.
Had Carlo Nucio took over.
Four drummers.
Four drummers in 2 years.
All at the same time?
No, in 2 years.
Then now, Carlo, did he die owing you money?
Because
he owed me money.
I owed him money.
Oh, really?
Sure. No, not the first guest to reply to Manny like that.
Yeah. He owed me money big time.
Maybe.
He was a good guy.
He was the best.
Yeah. We love Carlo.
He was the best.
So...
changed my life. His love changed my life.
Right
really?
On.
Yeah.
And I was actually,
absolutely. I know y'all had a different history.
No. We are all good. We're all
of
close.
Of course. Yeah.
No, I was watching one of y'all's videos today, and it was one that Carla was in.
Nice.
And it was one
that a 12-year-old made.
Towards the end.
A 12-year-old made that video.
Really?
Yes. Who's brilliant.
Now, all of y'all's videos have such a cool noir vibe to them, man. They're
well, we love that, of course. I mean, big on that.
Just the
those guys are big on it, whatever. Yeah,
but I mean, a lot of people like stuff, but you know, to actually achieve it, that's
thanks.
It's an accomplishment.
Thank you.
Especially to have a 12-year-old do something.
The 12-year-old did it with my friend, Sarah Minch.
So child labor. Yeah, child labor.
Well, I was trying to get this video made. I couldn't get it.
Human trafficking.
You know, a small pile of cash. And I was like, God, can't I get somebody to make a video for me with this thing? And they were like, and then my friend Sarah Inman, she was like,
for a pack
God,
of sweet tarts.
My kid won't get off my computer. He's just making videos all the time.
Oh.
Light bulb went out. I was like,
right.
Great. And I know him. He and I were already friends.
Okay.
I'm friends with many children.
Right. You do a lot of early childhood education stuff.
I do.
A lot of nanny work.
Indeed.
Kind of
in the classroom.
Punk rock Mary Poppins,
exactly.
If you will.
Exactly. In the classroom and on the private situation, just
private situation.
Love those
right.
kids. I've been working on master's degree in early childhood ed. So
is that at UNO?
It is not. It's UC Denver.
Oh, okay.
International program.
Oh, right on.
Dealing with the Reggio Emilia approach for all you early childhood ed nerds out there.
Right
yeah,
on.
Yeah, it's a great approach to early childhood ed. So.
Well, the children are fortunate to have someone like you.
As now, I am fortunate to know every one of them. You
right.
know, that's the philosophy.
Yeah,
and you and Manny
yeah.
have your own wonderful children, but I don't. I just have other
people. No, I mean, you're fortunate
children.
To know us. Is what I'm saying.
But you no touch the
words.
Children.
I touch the
not
children.
Not physically. You don't physically touch
them. I mean, physically.
Touch them.
I touch them all the time.
Really?
I mean, it's
in
mostly,
a good way.
You know.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's safe.
Nothing shady.
Yeah,
nothing
yeah,
shady.
Yeah, yeah,
okay. Ever.
We can all tell.
No,
you
of
can
course.
Usually tell about people.
Yeah.
Hopefully so.
I've been vetted.
Yeah, yeah.
So San Angelo Longo made the video and was beautiful. And even Will's Scully's son, they're best friends.
Okay.
Will Scully shot the second camera on it that you enjoyed seeing Carlo Nucio on the video.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
we made
yeah.
others. I love music videos. Like I was saying, MTV in my generation, I was like, oh my God, I couldn't believe it. You know, is it just being in the suburbs and like a kid, you know, and I'm
yeah.
like, I don't know, 8 or 10 years old when it came out. And I was just like, oh my God, this how whole other worlds exist. These
sure.
people are doing this stuff. I mean, I was already listening to the radio
right.
all the time, you know,
but
since
now
I
you actually
I,
see,
and then you
where
see
where
them,
they are,
you're like,
right.
oh my God, who are these people? And they're doing this whole
remember
other
when it first came out, you put it on, just left it on, let it wash over you. It's
absolutely.
Like, wow, this is the best thing ever.
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
I worked on many music videos.
Yeah.
Manny was out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, how fun.
Sunset Gower.
Yeah, I was at the Sunset Gower Studios, and I worked on so many music videos, I can't even remember.
You had a good time in L.A., I heard.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
You did. Such a good time. You had to leave.
Yeah, I had to leave.
New Orleans.
It was such a good time.
Had to come hide out in New Orleans.
Of all places, I came to New Orleans to clean up.
I guess
You know, but yeah, it was
only
good.
Got so
I worked
far.
On tons. I can't even get started on it. But yeah, anyway, now you're here.
Now
I'm
here.
Now
and we're
you've
working
been
on
here.
We're working on another record.
You're
so
on
we're
another
almost
record.
We're almost done with the other record. Carlo's on it. We've got four drummers on it.
So oh really?
Right.
Four drummers
record?
In 2 years. So it's taken a really
17 guitar players.
Long time. To
no, just
get this
the one
done.
I'm getting. Just Rob, right?
Just Rob. Who's the bass player?
Marcus Bronson.
Marcus
Bronson.
Yeah. So he's you know he's my longest collaborator.
Marcus
brings the groove.
So what does 2025 hold for Malvitas?
I mean, hopefully we release the record, you know?
Well, tell us about the record. So, who was the earliest drummer that you have recorded?
Carlo.
Gene Krupa.
Okay. That's going way back. Yeah, those are some...
That's the earliest drummer you have, right?
Going way back.
Larry, yes.
You know.
We released a couple of the songs with Carlo already.
Singles,
we did four songs with him, and then... There's some crossover between Jeff Massey and a younger jazz guy who played with us, Moses Etter, and now we have Jay Stiegner from Homa, who's just a fantastic drummer too.
Well, it's good to have a deep bench. You know, you guys are
a task.
But I know.
Yeah,
I know.
It's been a lot to manage.
Sure,
but
sure.
We're still just enjoying that and trying to tidy it all up and put it down you know. Press it and put it out there.
And the band sounds better than ever every time I hear you guys. You know, you as a performer, the band as a band, the material.
So let me ask you something about the music business.
What do you really think about us, Renee?
Okay, all right. You're like me. You don't like somebody gushing.
I do. I love it. I said I'd come on here, wouldn't I? I was like, how am I going to handle Renee gushing at me? I'm just going to say thank you.
He'll give you that $20. That's what he's going to do.
That $20 came from me.
That's what he's going to do. Fuck the gushing. Here's $20, man. Anyway, so I don't know anything about the music business anymore. I was in it for a few months or a few couple years.
Making music videos?
Well, no, but I actually had a
Manny
band
had a
in
band.
LA.
Oh, okay.
Front person for a band.
I was
okay,
in front of
I
the
did
band.
Hear that. I did hear that.
I did some tours with some major bands like the Smithereens, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and stuff.
That sounds
like that.
Fun.
Yeah, it was fun. But today, and the only thing we tried to do was make a record. And we only got one of our songs on a soundtrack.
Nice.
We never got to make a record.
And okay.
That was the only idea that I thought.
Most people now make a record so they can get one song on a soundtrack.
Right. But so what do you do now? You just finished a record.
Wow, that's a good question.
You finished some songs. So do you actually print up vinyl? Do you print up CDs?
I mean,
or do you just put it out there on the internet? Is that how does it work now?
Probably all of the above.
So you actually print some vinyl?
We did on the last one, and we made CDs and vinyl.
Uh-huh.
It's, again, I don't know, my discipline's performance art, and you know, I mean, to me, this is all a big art project. I'm really just adjacent to the music industry. I don't really feel like part of it, because it's like, you know, we don't live off of this. None of us live off of this. You know, we don't. There's not enough of a demand to see Malvitas. We can play, you know, once a month or once every 6 weeks. That's fine. It's really niche, though. In New Orleans, it's very niche. So it's not, you know, it's not on.
So you don't expect to make any money.
We don't have anyone behind us who thinks they can make money off of us. So that's you know.
Okay.
So we're gonna press some money or print some vinyls. We're gonna press some money ourselves.
Sure,
just start going that way.
Money,
we're just
going
to print some money
Take
ourselves.
But
it's like a currency for culture, and you know, we just love to do it and to be a part of the thing here, to be creative
in the 80s.
In the city,
back
it's beautiful.
In the 80s,
Atlantis.
Remember,
what are we going to do?
I remember back in the 80s, you know, a band in LA would just, you know, they'd record an album and they would just give it away. because they wanted people to listen to it.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And well, the radio stations to play it.
That's what people are basically doing nowadays.
Is that basically what it is?
Absolutely what people are doing now. Yeah, we stream it for free, of course, and then people come to the shows if they want to buy the object.
Because it's streaming. It's like, that's what you just said, stream. That's the key word.
I mean,
you're streaming it.
Yeah, it's really a strange thing. I love it as a consumer.
It's out there
I love
forever.
It. It's true, and I love. No, it's not. You got to pay to have your music streamed.
But once,
you know?
Let's say you die, we're all going to die.
True.
Who's going to take control of that streaming? Someone's going to own the rights.
It won't be our problem at that point. It really won't.
We'll be in the giant.
No, you're right.
Once cosmic stream.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know. We hope that that it goes on. We hope our work goes beyond our lifetime. Otherwise, what are we doing it
right.
for?
Well, you know, we're doing it for the joy of a job well done.
Absolutely.
Right here. Yeah. Now.
Love of humanity.
Well, you know, love of the process, love of doing it, love of being up there on stage. Now, so you did this thing, the song Proper Fucked I mentioned.
Yeah.
Now that wound up on this, how did the Amy Schumer thing come about?
Amy Schumer.
Because was not on the first episode. So,
it was not. And it was such a cool experience.
Yeah,
tell us
such
about a cool
that.
Experience. Old friend Ben Jaffe is pals with Amy Schumer.
Okay.
And she was here during the pandemic, perhaps while we were even having our conversation, and he was sharing music with her that she was looking for. She was here writing her show, and, you know.
I know, it's a good show, and they shot her wedding scene here in New Orleans. The episode.
The second season, they shot her.
It was all shot
in New
Orleans.
They had a whole episode here in New Orleans that was really fun.
Yeah, two, I think. It was her wedding and the after wedding thing. It was all shot here. That was a pretty good show.
I thought so, too. Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah.
So she heard your song from Ben?
Yeah, so she just loved it. And I think she told me she heard it at One Eye Jack's when was hanging out there. So that was great and licensed it. Just cherry picked it and wanted it, and it was such a funny process of licensing, and you know, I don't have an agent or manager, those kinds of things, so it was all my lawyer Vince Booth handled it for me, and
it's pretty cut and dry.
It's pretty good, and you know, but it could have fallen apart at any moment, but she really wanted it in there, so that was nice. And then she came to town doing a tour, doing her comedy tour, the horror tour.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, Ben, introduce me to her, and he's like, well, let me ask her. And he was like, yeah, hey, she's gonna come to my club and do a little mini set after the show. She wants you to sing the song if you want to. So so she did a little mini set, and then I came out and sang the song, and she
danced. Well, good thing she didn't ask you
around.
To tell jokes.
Yeah. Would have been cool if she
did. Because that happened to me at the Matador.
Yeah.
Would have been cool, but,
okay, well,
that happened
but it was
to me
a good experience.
Matador, yeah.
So
well, no, that was a good show. And I never got picked up for like a third or fourth season.
It did not. I think she's doing a new one that's like about similar kind of middle-aged woman things, which are cool.
Because I loved it because it went from like she's a Manhattanite and then she's moving out to like the suburbs or the country, whatever, and then her whole life changes big time.
She falls in love.
Yeah, she falls in love with
that story.
One of the worst actors ever, Michael Cera.
Oh, he's fun.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
He's fun, Mr. Manager.
Yeah, he's yeah, he's just so blame.
He's got a thing. He's got a thing he does.
I think he's I think he has a band too.
He's better than Jesse Eisenberg. I'll tell you that.
Oh, Jesse's all right.
Probably a bass player.
Jesse.
Anyway, well, I have a lot more notes, but they're all me gushing about you.
Come on now.
Oh, wow.
Come on, so give me some confidence. I gotta go back to work in the morning.
Well,
take care of some kids.
Here's one thing. So. I shifted to a friend of mine gushing about you. So, Nicole Pavi, one of my oldest friends, closest friends, since I met her when she was 14, I was 15, and we smoked pot together every day during when we went to Ben Franklin. And
nice.
You know, we were
what
there.
What up, Nicole?
You sound cool.
She's super cool. So I brought.
Did you sleep with her?
No. Okay. No. That's why we're still friends. But she's back in Australia currently. But she was at my gig at Broadside a couple of weeks ago with the Iguanas.
Oh, that was so fun. I was there too.
That was so fun.
I love that day.
I said, you know, I looked out there. And I thought, wow, this. I might be dead because this looks who would show up at my wake. It's my parents, my children, all my high school friends.
Your brother by another mother. Your wife introduced
Scott Ploche.
Yes.
He's one of my high school friends. But yeah, he's a person that certain people that are not very smart will go, "Are y'all twins?" I go, "He's fucking 3 inches taller than me. What are you?"
I know we have very close.
Striking resemblance.
I know. But Nicole, back to me.
Back to me. So I brought Nicole to see you at a Siberia show. And
thanks.
And it was the first time she was seeing you, and I was saying, "Oh, aren't these guys cool?" And we're watching. She turns to me. She goes, "You know, this is what punk rock really was." And I said, "Exactly." Which what she meant by that, like, you know, the whole advent of punk was each band had an idea on their own that was uniquely theirs about how they were going to play music. And, you know, before it became like a regimented kind of
genre,
you know, everybody playing like the Ramones or you know, whatever kind of, you know.
Before it was the genre.
And I said, yes, exactly.
Thanks. You know, that's a high praise.
Yeah.
I mean, I try. Every time I try to write a song, I'm trying to reinvent the wheel. I think it's like my, you know, studio approach to it is like sculptural to me. It's like, what is this? And what a song can be is infinite. So,
and you know, it's a perfect you know, combination of people, like where Rob's you know, improvisational music background and your kind of lack of fear about using dissonance, and you know, you have great time, great rhythm, so it allows you to, you know, you guys play with such a propulsive groove, it allows you to use pitch and dissonance, non-chord tones, non-scale tones, in a way that's extremely powerful, and in a way that no other bands in New Orleans are using it. So
thanks.
It's now
pitch. What's that?
Well, you know, it's something. It's a color. It's not
absolutely
bad, but it's not. You know, there's just the stretching of the possibilities is what's so compelling. And what I always tell people is, like, especially you as a performer, someone you can't take your eyes off of, because you might not be doing a lot, but you're always doing something. You know, you're always present. The use of the props, the way the very clever, you know.
Magician. Pulling things out of my hat.
Right.
Let me pull another rabbit out of my hat.
Right.
Entertain
right,
you.
Right.
So you cannot underestimate the element of surprise any situation, and performatively, I think, particularly.
Well, everybody has to go see this band.
And, thanks. Come on, y'all. Get over there.
And so what's coming up? We're
trying to finish this record.
Right,
yeah,
right.
That's what we're trying to do.
Playing these shows.
Let me ask you something,
Mary,
before we
question.
Sign off.
Yeah.
Would you rather have a paper cut on your eye or have a 300-pound person sit on your skull for 1 hour?
God, that is a really hard question.
I do this to all our guests.
I guess the paper cut on my eye.
You think?
Not me.
No, I don't think
how
so.
How would you have someone sit on your skull for an hour?
300-pound person.
You get used to it. After a while, you wouldn't even notice.
You would, like, smother. Wouldn't you get smothered?
No, you turn to the side so you can still breathe, you know.
Well, I guess they're 300-pound. They couldn't
that.
Sit on your whole head, though. I mean, that's you have to be specific about what. About that sitting.
A 300-pound person.
I'm just thinking.
You're lying on your back.
Okay.
and this person sits, a 300-pound person sits on your skull.
He said you could lie on your side, though.
No. You're on your back.
Uh-huh.
And this...
But you would suffocate. You would suffocate. So would I want to die or would I want to get a paper cut on my eye versus dying?
You got to take the paper
cut. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to die.
See, I was thinking if you could do the wrestling move where you get to answer the telephone.
No, put your hand up on your ear.
So you could make some space to breathe.
I know, and if you think about a 300-pound person, like, they can't have their whole... Unless you had to be required to sit all the way under them, you could be on kind of like the side of their thigh. Or something.
You could be face down.
I get to choose my position under the 300-pound person, face down. Is the other choice?
Can you put your
Tempur-Pedic mattress? What?
So
where do you fit?
You would take the paper cut on your eyeball.
Well, you'd have to.
You would. It's between death or a paper cut on your eyeball.
I think it could last an hour with 300 pounds on your skull.
I don't know. I mean. I mean,
there's nowhere
skull,
to go.
Not
there's
over your
nowhere
mouth
to
and
go.
Nose.
But that's part of your skull. You can't take your mouth and nose
but
off your
skull.
But
if you're face down, right, you can still
get to turn
breathe.
To the side.
But not if they were covering you, though. There would be no way
be
to
tough.
Have
it'd be tough.
Have air if they were covering you.
I
just a simple
so
question.
So many
yes or no.
It's just like, yes or no.
One or the other.
Which videos is what I'm saying to you. Which videos?
I don't know.
Like I lost on Jeopardy. Or like,
man, he's for the show.
I
beat it. Like some of the seminal videos.
I
you don't remember?
Well, I remember all those videos.
Okay.
It's just a simple answer. Yes or no?
Okay.
No.
The eye
no.
or the 300
pounds? The answer
pounds?
Is no.
Okay, so you want the eye. You want the eye.
No.
A paper cut?
I don't want anything.
Okay. All right.
All right. I want nothing.
All right.
Okay.
Well,
good.
Someone who
wants nothing.
Demands. That's right.
Want nothing.
Right. Well, you're probably going to get what you want.
You're right.
Well, this has been such a fun show. I'm so glad we could get
me
you
too.
Back here in person. You see, we didn't have this kind of
I know.
This kind of back and forth when we were on the computer.
It's fun to have a rapport.
Right, yes, a rapport.
Rapport.
You know, within rapport, anything is possible.
No.
You can't even get away with that because you know. I mean, sure, no.
All right, let's wrap it up.
No. Right,
so
nothing
anyway,
is possible.
So anyway.
Everything is possible.
Everything is possible. So wish the Troubled Nation a happy new year.
Yeah.
And thank you, Tiana.
Tiana, thank you. Yes.
Thank you, Manny. Renee, what a pleasure. Yeah.
Yes. And as always, in the Troubled Nation, we like to say, trouble never ends.
But you know... The struggle continues constantly. Good night.
Good night.
It's sinister. These sins in her. He sends in her.